when I read things like the foundations of capitalism are shattering, I'm like, maybe we need that. Maybe we need some time where we're walking around with a donkey with pots clanging on the sides.
You think that would just bring us back to reality?
Yeah, because everything is amazing right now, and nobody's happy. Like, in my lifetime, the changes in the world have been incredible. When I was a kid, we had a rotary phone. We had a phone that you had to stand next to, and you had to dial it.
Yes.
You realize how primitive, you're making sparks in a phone, and you actually would hate people with zeros in their numbers, because it was more,
right.
Like, oh, this guy's got two zeros, screw that guy, why do I want to... And then if they called and you weren't home, the phone would just ring lonely by itself. And then if you wanted money, you had to go in the bank. For when
yes.
It was open for like 3 hours, you had to stay in line, write yourself a check like an idiot. And then when you ran out of money, you'd just go, well, I can't do any more things now.
Right.
I can't do any more
That's
things.
That's it, yeah.
That was it. And even if you had a credit card, the guy would go, ugh, and he'd bring out this whole chunk, and he'd write,
yes.
Oh, he'd have to call the president to see if you had any money. And
it's all true, kids. You had to call the president, yeah. It was ridiculous.
Yes.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, ugh. It won't. Give it a second. It's going to space. Can you give it a second to get back from space?
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on.
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Hey, we're getting our apartment. We ripped up the floors, pipes, wiring, having everything completely redone.
You're running, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's an ex-freebase addict, and he's trying to turn his life around, and he needs a place to stay for a couple of months.
Now that I have kids, I feel a lot better having a gun in the house.
Hey. I thought about it, and even though it's over, I'm going to tell my wife about the affair.
I don't know the guy, but I've got two kidneys, and he needs one, so figured.
Normally, I wear protection, but then I thought... When am I going to make it back to Haiti?
Bad idea, Jim.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Get these guys.
$100.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Bad idea jeans.
You love that bad idea jeans.
Love that. Because, you know, I mean, it's...
You get a lot of mileage out of that shit.
I crank the memes. I like the old SNL memes. It drives me batshit, though. I mean, what we just went through... God, we're diving in head first now. I mean, what we just went through was like a segment of the Bad Idea Jeans commercial parody from Saturday Night Live. You guys decided to cut spending in a slow growth, jobless recovery.
Right.
Bad idea.
Yeah, well, of course, it doesn't make any sense at all, but now we're all stuck with it, so
yeah.
Welcome to us.
I'm exhausted. I really, it's been one of those, I don't know, since the previous show last week, watching everything happen, I feel like right now is I just want to take a vacation. I just want to, like
watching a week. Watching the entire country go down the drain can be taxing, literally, or not literally, as it were.
Well, when it's exhausting when you're looking at the goings on and saying, this absolutely makes no sense. I mean, I don't understand. And then everyone's kind of trying to justify and say, well, there are aspects of this deal that are good, and look at this and the defense spending. I'm looking at it from the bigger picture point of view and saying, you know, what? I mean, we talked about this last week.
Right.
Why are we even having this conversation? Why on earth are we talking about spending cuts in a slow growth, jobless recovery?
Because we're dumb. Because this is a we have a bunch of people in Congress who don't understand shit. Yeah. They just don't. And it's, this is where we are.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And it's sad. As I say this, I realize just how completely ineffectual I sound, because I'm exhausted too. And this is the problem. It's been so incredibly it just wears you down so badly that after a while, it's almost like I want to bury my head and, put my pillow around my head and just go to sleep and not wake up for a couple of years.
Not wake up. Do like what? Like Rip Van Winkle or something.
Yeah. Just, wake me honestly when the next century is over.
It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob. That's Chez Pazienza over there. I wish I could agree with you about Congress just being dumb. I just think it's more – I think it's beyond dumb. I think it's a lot more sinister and malevolent than that. I really believe that they're doing this as a concerted effort to sabotage the economy and then to therefore sabotage the president. And they're doing it. I mean, they worked. I mean, their plan worked because what they've done is they've put this austerity, all these spending cuts, deficit reduction, debt reduction, for God's sake. When was the last time in your memory that the national debt was such a colossal fucking issue? I mean,
it wasn't. Yeah. It's never been. But, now it's going to be again. The Republicans have all been admitted that. They've said that, McConnell has said the albino sleaze tack has come out and said that, I think I referred to him earlier this week as like Colonel Nathan Jessup, because he's one of those guys who just they're pulling the code. The Republicans are pulling a code red on the country and they want desperately to tell you about it. They really do. There's not an ounce of them that want to hide what they're doing. When the whole Libya thing was going down, he flat out said that the only reason that we're raising a big public stink about it is because of the fact that there's a Democrat in the White House. And now they're saying, we took the debt ceiling hostage and it worked and we're going to continue to do it. And from now on, the only bullshit thing he said is when he said from now on, no president is going to be able to raise the debt ceiling again without getting this kind of fight, which is utter nonsense, because the second that there's a Republican in the White House, if the Republicans are still in control of the House, he or she is absolutely not going to see anything like this.
No, no. Well, I mean, it seems to me as if, I mean, the debt was always something that it was just that graphic that was up on that billboard in Manhattan. It was just up on the side of a building in Manhattan. And you say, wow, God, that's a gigantic number. Wow, how many zeros are there? And it keeps ticking up and up and up and up. But, it was just kind of a novelty. Yeah, of course there's going to be national debt. We have a gigantic – we have a country of 300 million people. We're going to spend a lot of money. We do things – we sort of have a semi-socialistic way of life here where the government provides certain services and we all contribute to those services through taxes. I mean, that's just to put a very simplistic spin on it. But it's true. And so we borrow money and we pay that money back, and that's just how it works. I mean, that's how we function as a nation. And then suddenly black guy becomes president and the Republicans go batshit about suddenly we're in the midst. When President Obama was inaugurated, we're going to get to these numbers in a little bit, but the recession was much deeper. I mean, twice as deep as they originally thought. There's just brand new numbers regarding the last quarter, I think, of 2008 and the first quarter of 2009, where the recession was just phenomenally dismal, more dismal than anyone could have imagined. And this guy fights hard right out of the chute, passes a stimulus plan, $800 billion. Everything
catches a massive ration of shit for it.
That's right. Oh, we're all socialists now. He's a communist and just all this bullshit red baiting from the right. And suddenly it became, all right, now we have to reduce the deficit. We have to reduce that national debt, or else we're all going to go to hell. We're going to be another Greece. We're all going to be doomed. The economy is going to go straight to hell. It was already in hell and recovering, thank you very much. But I mean, you were mentioning Mitch McConnell, and I want to get to this before we lose track of the albino sleaze deck. Yeah, I mean, this was the purpose here. Here's the quote from this week. This is right on the heels of the Republicans making a big deal over Joe Biden referring to Republican tactics as being terrorist-like. I mean, it's used the terrorist word, Joe Biden did, Vice President. And everyone flipped their shit. The Republicans went nuts. The far right talk radio people, the far right blogosphere, they all went batshit over this and over what the vice president said. But then, like less than 24 hours later, Mitch McConnell says, quote, "I think some of our members may have thought the default issue was a hostage. You might take a chance at shooting. Most of us didn't think that. What we did learn is this. It's a hostage that's worth ransoming. And it focuses the Congress on something that must be done."
Right.
And there you go. I mean, that's yes. that's all
we,
of it.
We took a hostage in an effort to make the government, for political reasons that we felt necessary, in an effort to make the government do what we want. That's the definition of a terrorist.
That's right. I mean, it's terrorism in the sort of the Hans Gruber from Die Hard way. I mean,
they are exceptional thieves, not common thieves.
But they were considered terrorists, and I think what happened is, I think the far right gets a little confused. I think when they heard Joe Biden say terrorism or terrorists, they were thinking, we don't wear turbans, we don't live in caves,
Muslim?
Yeah. So, like, terrorism or terrorists, it becomes synonymous with Muslims, with Islamic extremism. But
they're more terrorists actually, you know, now that I think about it, who does look like one of Hans Gruber's men? What's his name? Breivik, who looks like he could have stepped right off the elevator with Hans's men armed with the MP5s there.
That's right.
In the Nakatomi building. He's like, you can actually hear Hans Gruber saying, you know, "Get me Breivik on the phone."
Yippee-ki-yay.
That's right.
But yeah, it's clear. And then I think this past weekend, Mitch McConnell was also once again reiterating, you know, something he said repeatedly, which is that, you know, their goal is to make President Obama a one-term president. That's their goal. Mitch McConnell's got the easiest job in the world. He doesn't need to engage in any strategy, doesn't need to engage in any sort of negotiation. His goal is single-fold, and that is to obstruct, to just do the opposite of whatever it is the Democrats and the White House are doing.
Right. Well, that's the thing we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Whoever it was who said that all you need to know, the Republicans are actually very easy to figure out. And the only thing you need to know, there's nothing hypocritical about it, is that whatever the president says, he's wrong. Obama is always wrong. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's the easiest. It's the easiest thing in the world to figure out.
Right. And you know what? I'm scouring Media Matters right now. Media Matters did an extended piece, I think it was yesterday, but it's already like dropped off of their front page, where they essentially went through and documented all of the right wing terrorism talk. I mean, yeah, I'm not breaking any news here. We're not talking about anything that's beyond the pale. I mean, this is all stuff that we know. That's the far right are just a bunch of whiny poopy babies. I mean, that's what they and they've engaged in all of this sort of talk. I mean, Sarah Palin saying that the president pals around with terrorists, you know, you got, routinely referring to liberals as eco-terrorists. This is nothing new. I mean, for God's sake, just because
it just gets exhausting.
It really is.
It really does. You know, I mean, I wrote something a very long time ago. This is the thing that I wrote did I mention this already? My brain doesn't work right now. The thing that got me into the big battle with Andrew Breitbart, when he wrote he wrote me a, 3 a.m, seemingly half drunk missive, I think it was last year. And he got pissed because I had written something about James O'Keefe that he didn't like. And the funny thing was, what I had written actually didn't really slam James O'Keefe. I wrote a piece where I basically said, whatever James O'Keefe is, whatever people are saying on the left that's negative toward James O'Keefe doesn't matter. And whatever James O'Keefe is saying doesn't matter, because they're both just preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where you really start feeling like, why am I even bothered to talk? You know, why am I bothering to talk?
Yeah.
There are only, you know, the people, quite frankly, the people who will be listening to this podcast more than likely already agree with a lot of what we're going to say. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they don't go out and find other opinions, but trust me, even if they do, they'll be in the minority.
Yeah.
Because these days, you don't need to ever hear an opinion that conflicts with your own. There are so many different media outlets now, so many different sources of news, and obviously Fox is, you know, the big one for the right, that the right and left live in two and I think the right really does it. I think the left does it a little bit less. But the right lives in a completely different world now, with their own sets of facts, you know, their own bullhorns, and it makes you just feel like no matter what you say, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference.
Yep.
The president of the United States can get up there and say, this is what's going on. This is what, you know, this is what we need to understand right now. This is how the, you know, this is how the economy works. This is what's going to be best for the country. And you can have the people on both sides arguing against him. But whatever his comment is, when it gets filtered through Fox, it becomes whatever he said was bullshit and it's negative, and it's overwhelmingly depressing.
Yeah. Well, here's the crux of the issue here is that I think I hate to say it, but I think the far right is much better at just repeating robotically the same things over and over again, flummoxing. I think Digby once referred to it as intellectual violence, where they just don't give a shit. They can say the same horse crap over and over and over again. It doesn't matter how hypocritical they are. It doesn't matter if they even contradict themselves within the same sentence. They just keep going. They just keep plugging away at it.
It's a complete lack of shame.
Yeah, that's what it is. But you know what? I hate to say it. It works for them.
It works very well.
What we tend to do, I guess just in the most general terms, like what liberals and progressives tend to do, is we'll hit something. We'll nail a meme and then kind of get bored with it and then kind of move on. And we are, I mean, we try to be as much as possible. Certainly there are some exceptions. I like to bust on the firebaggers a lot because they're so devoid of this, but we like to be intellectually honest. We at least try to be.
I agree with that completely. And I think that most people, I think it has nothing to do with liberals, progressives, or whatever. I think it has to do with most people who are not ideologues.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of them. You know, and once again, you know, I'm not going to play the both sides meme. I know you hate that, and so do I. You know, it isn't as bad on the left as it is on the right, mostly because the left demonize Democrats and liberals tend to demonize those who are the furthest to the left, and they certainly don't, even if they don't do that, they certainly don't embrace them. The right embraces its fringe and lets its fringe dictate every single thing that it does. This is the reason why, you know, the Tea Party is their gods right now. You know, they control the Republican Party, and it's once again, it's just overwhelmingly depressing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, I fall into that category as well. I mean, I find myself, you know, when I see my latest whipping boy is Ed Schultz, when I see Ed Schultz going off, this is how we got good. You know, I kind of cringe and get a little nauseous. I don't necessarily throw up in my own mouth. I'm not that crazy about it. But it is kind of embarrassing. I get a little sweaty over that because I think just settle down. There are sane arguments that you can make that just cut right to the core. This is why I continue to contribute to the Huffington Post. I love the Huffington Post, and I make no bones about that. I mean, I'm loyal to Roy Seacoff. And
yeah, I like Roy.
I like that format. Why? Well, no other format am I able to really try to or make a case for progressivism where I can go in it's a challenge. It really is. I mean, it's hard to do because you know the audience is so mixed, at least judging by the comment section. If you look at the comment section alone, you're not preaching to a choir there.
That is true. That is very true. And I do appreciate that. I mean, shit, I get ripped apart on Huffington. I get called like a reactionary tyrant.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I mean, what I do is I try to just approach it as if I'm speaking to people who need to be convinced, and so I think that actually benefits, you know, or it forces me to make sure I've got my facts right, that I actually, you know, can flank them at any turn. If they go one way, I kind of got that covered. And I got, you know, I just bombard with as many, you know, statistics and things like that as I can squeeze in and still have a readable piece. And that's why I love it. I think that's, I think if we look at it that way, we approach the Huffington Post that way, it makes it invaluable. And I think it's a great exercise in being as intellectually honest as possible while still making a persuasive argument. On the right, there's just a phenomenal echo chamber where the same, I don't know how they, it's remarkable to me that they continue to get away with it, that they continue to get away with just, I mean, there's no shame. Where Mitch McConnell, the Senate majority leader or a Senate minority leader, can get on television and say, basically, you know what, the only thing I have to say is, the only thing I have to say is, I want to make President Obama a one-term president, and that's that. I have no agenda other than that. I have no positions on policy, nothing specific to speak of, and certainly I would never do that because I would either anger the left of the Republican Party or the Tea Party, and he doesn't want to do any of that, so his only option is then to obstruct as often as possible. So that's why, yeah. I mean, so these are reasons, plus many, many more, why we have the situation that we're in now, where they just decided, well, Barack Obama wants to stimulate the economy with, you know, in a sensible mathematical way. This works. This other thing does not work. This stimulus works. Cutting the deficit and cutting taxes for the super rich, that doesn't work. Show me a time in history when deficit reduction and a slow growth recovery, a jobless recovery, show me when deficit reduction has ever created economic stimulus. It simply hasn't. I mean, I couldn't find it. And believe me, because I was writing on this for the Huffington Post yesterday, I did go and look it up. And from the information that I was able to ascertain, I couldn't find any examples of it. I couldn't find a single example of deficit reduction stimulating the economy with these present conditions. Now, granted, we don't often have these present conditions where you have, but you did leading up to the Great Depression. Great Depression had, at the time it had a booming economy, but there was also a housing issue. There were all kinds of things that formed that perfect storm to create the Great Depression. And then we kind of revisited all of that in 1937. Where, you know, the deficit reduction took hold and we slipped back into recession. It was just bad news. It was very, very bad.
Well, I think that kind of like what you were saying, I don't think that the Republicans give a crap about the fact that they're not really representing anyone anymore besides the very wealthy and their own, you know, their own sort of interests as congressional Republicans. Republican politicians, and you know, politicians tend to have a lot of money. Like I said, they'll flat out admit to you that this is the way it is. That quote from Eric Cantor about, you know, the FAA shutdown that was cleared up today, where he basically said, you know, the reason that airlines are pocketing the tax money that they would normally be spending to the FAA is because, well, you know what? I guess that's what business does. It's like, yeah, okay. You know, and what happened to you giving a crap about the American people, about the little people who are, you know, who can't afford to fly or can't afford to do anything? Because these people are, while the rich get richer and richer and richer, and it is once again, I keep coming back to it because it's been that kind of week. It's just completely, completely exhausting. Yeah. It becomes an unfathomable, kind of loop of craziness.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And then you hear this from people who are, you know, heretofore screeching about deficit reduction, government spending, and how we need to stop all of that. And they've, in fact, disrupted the entire recovery of the economy in order to have this done. And yet they don't have any interest whatsoever in resolving this FAA issue. I'm speaking to House Republicans, Eric Cantor. And so what do we have? I mean, we have a situation that costs the government millions a day. Millions a day to keep the in terms of lost revenue. And they just, I mean, so it just, it all goes back to this hair-pulling, insanity-inducing behavior from the Republicans. And I what's even more frustrating, Chez, about all of it is I don't see the Democrats doing an effective job. And I don't know if they can do an effective, I don't know if they're allowed to do an effective job, but I don't see, do you see Chris Christie this week, where Chris Christie was just like, ah, screw those teabaggers and their Sharia law horse shit.
That was, you know what, honestly, seriously, I put something up on the blog about that today. Yeah. Credit where credit's due. You know, I'm not a big fan of a lot of Chris Christie's policies, and it's really sad to think that it's so bad out there that simply saying something sane is an act of courage on the right, but good for him, really. Good for him for basically saying, you people are fucking nuts.
Yeah. Well, and Chris Christie himself, I mean, he's fucking nuts too. But the problem is that we don't have anyone on our side who can get away with that. So there are a lot of Democrats, liberals, progressives who want to speak like that, but the press doesn't allow them. I mean, I was watching Hardball today, and you know, Chris Matthews was just glowing. I mean, he was just ecstatic about what Chris Christie said. But if you know, Joe Biden refers to the conservatives as and the Republicans as terrorists, then it's, ooh, tisk, 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 you know, doing the little finger gesture, the tisk, tisk gesture, and shaming them. You know, Mark Halperin.
An odd double standard. I mean, I think it is because the Republicans, and this is not some sort of paranoid conspiracy theory. I think it's because the Republicans are very, very good at controlling the message and controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
They have, you know, the as much screeching as they do about the liberal media, they've got the media by the balls. Mm-hmm. The media is afraid to say anything that will piss them off for fear of being labeled the liberal media, which they're going to be labeled anyway, because it's not about whether it's a true statement or not. It's about having a boogeyman, and the right, you know, the right thrives off of its enemies, the enemies that it can take to its red meat supporters and say, here, look, you know, see what you're up against. Thank God we're there for you.
Yeah.
But they control. They're very, very good at controlling the narrative, and it's an incredible thing to behold. And you know, I know you use this term a lot. It's funny. I try to stay away from it just because of the Glenn Beck, automatic Glenn Beck reference. But the Overton window. You know, they are excellent at moving the Overton window to the right, and rather than actually do anything that benefits anyone or do anything that as you say, can be put up for a debate. It's just sort of like, well, you know what, we're moving it. We're going to move the conversation to the right and to our constituency. Don't question whether or not what we're doing is right for you. You know, keep believing us when we say that rah-rah capitalism and it's working out really, really freaking well for you. You live in a trailer park, by the way, but it's best that you support us. Because, you know, we're going to make sure that, I don't know, we're going to take care of the billionaires, and that's going to have a massive, massive effect on you. Those fuckers are going to be spending money on you left and right, which is absolute nonsense.
Yeah. They have such incredible message discipline, you know, and it's a shame because their message is, it blows. And if we had the same message discipline, if we just didn't give a shit what Chris Matthews or Mark Halperin had to say on television and spoke honestly like Chris Christie and stuck with it and just said, you know what, F you, these guys are nuts.
I think actually that the left, and I will go, you know, I referenced this a little while ago. I would go so far as to say the center as well, because what these people are representing is definitely not the average independent American. You know, the polls confirm that. I think that people in the center and on the left would be very wise to come up with a new kind of pundit. You know, I mean, the Stewarts and the Bill Maher's of the world, they're fantastic. They really are. I always like them, and I think that they're great voices. But, you know, just there have to be average people who are not screechers who just say, yeah, you know what? This is bullshit. This is just bullshit.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, you know what? We have this gift that tends to well, it's a double-edged sword. The left has this gift for comedy and snark. And oftentimes it can be so incredibly incisive, and it can just cut right to the heart of an issue. Other times, you know what? We look like dicks. We just do. Sometimes liberals look like assholes.
We look like little pop collar douchebags. You know, we do.
Right.
Everything, you know, it's very elitist. It's very condescending, and I do it too. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? I'm a raging asshole. I don't like anybody.
Right.
Yeah, I'm equal opportunity.
Oh,
when it comes
I'm just
to
as
that.
Guilty. I'm right there with you. But I mean, that's. Right. I mean, it's just the nature of the left, and I think if we found a way to harness all of that and, you know, and just make these arguments in just that sort of juggernaut fashion, the way the right does, I think we would be much more successful. Everyone thinks they've got the best idea. Everyone thinks they've got their own greatest meme. No one wants to repeat someone else's meme for fear of being hackish or whatever. We just need to, you know what, screw that. Let's get focused. Let's get on the ground. Let's convince some people door to door. And that's, to me, that's the magic bullet. That's what solves everything that is hurting the left right now. We just don't have that discipline. We would rather, you know, wave our fists on Twitter than to go door to door and say, you know what, here's why you're a progressive, sir. You know, because a lot of Americans, you go poll by poll, and this is nothing new. I've said this a million times. You go poll by poll, and most Americans are more progressive than not on a variety of top shelf issues. And it's just a matter of framing it that way, about going door to door and telling people what they really ought to know, but in a way that drives it home for them, makes them realize that they support Medicare, that they support Social Security, these socialist programs, that they support, you know, public roads and public schools, and, you know, they're pro-choice and pro-gun regulation and all these things. We just don't do that. We just don't. We're too busy being assholes and pricks. You know what I mean?
Very good.
Yeah, well.
Liberals tend to be too smart for their own good, too analytical for their own good, and they value – this is something that came from back in the 60s. You know, they value individualism. They're not very good at getting together, like you said, getting together with a bunch of people and staying on message.
Mm-hmm. Right. We get nowhere unless the team wins. Teamwork. Everything goes back to the Untouchables, huh?
It does.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show, brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com at www.BubbleGenius.com. Of course. Best goddamn soap ever. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius. And here is their brand new commercial.
It's National Clown Week! Bubble Genius invites you to celebrate your inner goof with one of our silly soaps, like Bathes Like Chicken, Rubber Chicken Soap. Or try our Three Ring Suds Circus Peanut Soap. A bag of delightful soapy peanuts. They look and smell like the real thing, but don't eat them, you wackadoodle. They're soap. So get your clown shoes on and chase away icky dirt. In a funny way. Tickle your funny bone with Bubble Genius. BubbleGenius.com.
We are Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Make sure to enter your promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, and get 15% off your entire order at BubbleGenius.com. Do it now. that was overly forceful. Just, good damn it, go buy some soap. Yeah, I wanted to talk. I wanted to get into the what we're experiencing now as a result, at least from what I have observed, as a result of the debt ceiling deal. And it's not looking good. I mean, we had a massive sell-off on Wall Street today. I think, what was it down? What was the end result? I think it was down like something like 400 points the last time I saw.
512.
500,
I think.
Yeah. Biggest stock market decline since 2008.
Yeah, I talked to my mother, my, 68-year-old mother, who, her and my dad have worked their whole lives. It's, the classic American story. And my mother is watching their retirement account because they're still working. They're one of those couples. They still have to work. And they're watching the retirement account that they built up throughout most of their life. Just, like my mother says, it's vanishing before my eyes.
Yeah.
And that was depressing as hell in the what is supposed to be the richest country in the world.
Right. I mean, we often tend to lose sight of that. We actually forget that, Wall Street does directly affect Main Street, the rest of us. I mean, even though we're not direct, we're not buying and selling, we're not day trading on E-Trade or whatever they do. But yet we've got mutual funds, we've got retirement accounts, and these are all guided by the success or failure of Wall Street. And when Wall Street tanks, when Wall Street doesn't do well, we're all kind of screwed because we all in some way have our foot in that pool. But, even going deeper than that, I mean, here are some of the impacts of cutting the deficit at this point. And again, going back to that repeated argument that this should never have been a point of discussion in the first place. And here are the results. The Financial Times reports that were one false move. I mean, they actually said the words one false move. It's like an old timey 1930s gangster movie. One false move.
Actually, it works in the hostage connotation.
Right.
It's kind of fitting.
One false move away from recession. In the same piece, Jim Reed, a strategist at Deutsche Bank, warned of a 1937 moment. Harvard economist Martin Feldstein is predicting a 50-50 chance of another recession. According to the Huffington Post, Bill Gross, co-chief investment officer of the financial services company PIMCO, says we're at the tipping point of another recession. I mean, this is just bad, bad news. There's another the Economic Policy Institute, which I have trouble saying, let's just call them the EPI, reports that the debt ceiling deal will reduce GDP by 0.3% in 2012. Now, 0.3% in and of itself, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal. But when you look at what GDP is doing right now, it's 1%, 1.5%. So you cut that by 0.3% and in a vacuum, that's only taking into consideration the impact of the deficit reductions. It doesn't take into consideration housing. It doesn't take into consideration Wall Street. 0.3% is a big deal when you're talking about slow growth. Or
it's bad. It's I always make fun of those commercials that they run now that. Anybody can pay for a commercial now. Anybody can pay for a political commercial. So, I always used to laugh at those commercials with, the woman who says, I'm terrified. I wake up in the middle of the night fretting over President Obama. I mean, the entire idea of a middle-aged white woman getting up in the night because she's thinking of President Obama kind of scares me. But, but all of a sudden I've turned into that person. I'm like, shit, you know what? I'm not losing sleep just yet, but it's like, God, you know what? Things suck. This whole fucking disaster that last week was at least kind of worth making fun of has, as embarrassing, as shameful and shitty as it was, has turned into like, wow, it's a major turning point in who we are as a country. Mm-hmm. What we have just allowed to be decided for us. It changes us fundamentally, and will probably tip us over the edge. And I kind of felt like, even though things aren't great for a lot of people, after a while, you either learn to sort of live with the pain or, you know, it's sort of your human nature kind of resets itself a little bit and you say, okay, well, this is the new reality and I'm going to learn to live with it. Or maybe things were getting better. I'm not sure. But either way, I felt a little bit better at least. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, you know what? I see that there are some jobs out there now. I see that at least some people I know are going back to work. So at least maybe the worst is behind us. And now it's like, fuck, I just got nailed in the ass again.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I feel like I'm still extricating myself from the previous recession. And I'm starting to see, you know, things are looking better. I mean, you know, in my I make most of my money with cartoon animation. And, you know, there was a period of time there.
Certainly a recession-proof industry.
That's right.
God, everybody loves cartoons.
I wish it was. I wish it was. You know what it's become? It's like a luxury anymore. And because of the way the economy is, people right. only buy cartoons if they've got a pile of cash and they just, you know, they say, wow, you know, wouldn't it be great to spend this money on cartoons? You know, get into a recession when, you know, with reality television and user generated content dominating and say, well, you know what, I'm going to spend thousands of dollars on a cartoon. It just doesn't happen in a recession. And things were starting to come back. I mean, things were starting to open up, and certainly not the way they were prior to the recession, which was big money. And especially during the dot-com era, huge money. And it just, it's all, you know, I'm just so worried and up at night going, what's going to happen? And that's why you just go back to the broader theme of elections matter. Elections now more than ever. 2010 matters. You know, Ed Schultz getting on TV and saying, you know what? I'm not going to vote. I want to know what you think, America. Am I wearing pants? Text A for yes. Text B for no.
I mean, you know what? The other point, whatever the hell percent of any poll he does, that's the percentage of people who think that Ed Schultz is an asshole. Which, oddly enough, you know, might be the smartest people watching.
So getting back to this.
Elections matter.
The elections matter. The EPI also said that by 2012, 1.8 million jobs that would otherwise have been created will not be created. 1.8 million jobs will basically be destroyed by 2012. And the real cuts in the debt deal don't kick in until 2013. So what we're getting now with this debt deal is basically a shitstorm leading up to another shitstorm. So I hear a lot of people trying to see the cup half full and saying, well, the real cuts don't happen until 2013. Yeah, but the consequences of the deal now and the consequences of these early cuts that actually do kick in right away are going to create a horrible, horrible platform for the real cuts happening in 2013. So it's not like suddenly, oh, well, we've got this debt deal. The economy is going to continue to grow. Unemployment's going to go down. By the time 2013 rolls around, everything's going to be unicorns and rainbows, and it's not going to matter if we're cutting. Yes, it is going to matter, because all of these terrible things are going to happen in the interim between now and 2013.
That's the whole idea of consumer confidence.
That's right. Meanwhile, due to discretionary spending cuts in the deal, the states, which have their own budget problems in the first place, won't be receiving enough federal money for crucial social programs. Like, they're basically all the discretionary spending that you're hearing about, which include earmarks and the like, those aren't going to be happening. You're going to have a major cutback in discretionary spending as a result of this deal. So the states aren't getting enough money. And as a result of that, everything from Head Starts, this is CBS News reporting this, everything from Head Start school readiness programs, Meals on Wheels, worker training initiatives, funding for transit agencies and education grants that serve disabled children, all of that stuff is going to be cut. Also, yeah, concern.
Quick aside. I'm going to assume that you saw Matt Damon basically rip the people from Reason TV a new asshole. Yeah. That was beautiful.
Yeah,
it was. Really was. Yeah, that's just, you brought up education, and that was the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a great example of making an argument that that resonates with everybody. I mean, the way Matt Damon framed that is.
Damon is amazing. He really is. I mean, he's one of the very, very few. And I am as averse to the sort of traditional Hollywood liberal, you know, Barbra Streisand type bullshit as anybody. You know, I mean, my politics tend to lean, you know, center left, but it aggravates the crap out of me to see the sort of holier than thou shit. And quite frankly, Damon never talks like that. He's just straightforward, and he gets pissed when he needs to get pissed. And I mean, and he speaks from his heart, and that's, I think that's ballsy as hell.
He's just got that balance and tone. I mean, watching that videotape is actually kind of a media lesson. Watch it. I mean, look at it, yeah. And watch how he just lays it all out. He's not shouting, but he's forceful. And he doesn't back down. And he makes a solid case for education. And that's the way it ought to be done. That's why we, you know, he's not a dick about it, but he's assertive.
He called the guy a shitty cameraman, which I love.
So also in the CBS News report, there's also a concern among governors, state lawmakers, and state agency heads that Congress would make deep reductions or changes in federal aid for health services for the needy, most notably through Medicaid. That could shift more of the cost onto states that are already having trouble balancing their budgets. So when the president said that the debt deal is not going to hurt poor people. Sorry, Mr. President. That's wrong. It's wrong. It's absolutely going to hurt poor people.
Okay. So here's something that let's get to this subject.
Okay.
Because you and I, believe me, I've done an awful lot of soul searching over this over the past couple of days. Started to write something on it, backed off, started to write something on it. I've been busy anyway, so I can use that as an excuse. But, you know, My I'm sure that for people who read me really regularly, my silence on this may be suspicious, may be conspicuous. What do you think about Obama right now? What are your thoughts on it? Because you know what? I got to tell you, I can't remember who the hell it was who wrote it in Salon today, who basically made the argument that Hillary should primary him. And this is something that I have very quietly sort of gone to in my mind a couple of times, which is not, you know, I like Obama and I think he's done a lot of really, really great things that he does not get credit for. And I'm certainly not going to be one of those people who, because this turned out badly, you know what, fuck that. I'm abandoning you and you know, I'm not doing the knee jerk thing. But There have definitely been times, because I was one of those people who came out in favor of Obama during the 2008 election over Hillary, because I found, you know, I thought Hillary was what she's always been, which is calculating, you know, a political monster, in both the positive and negative, you know, the best sense and the worst sense. And I really bought into, you know, hope and change, hopey changey, as Sarah Palin would say. And I wanted that. I thought that this country deserved that, and I thought that Obama could give that. And I think that in a lot of ways he has, in ways that he doesn't get credit for. I think reality is reality, and that's kind of what's had to sort of rope him in a little bit. But over the past couple of years, there have always been times when I've thought to myself, especially when the Republicans get very obstructionist, where I've thought, how would Hillary have handled this? Because, you know, I mean, she does play politics very well, incredibly well. And she doesn't take bullshit. And you know what? I read that piece today in Salon and I really did start thinking, I'm like, you know, would it, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but you know, how terrible would it be for her to primary Obama?
It'd be awful. That'd be the worst case scenario, because it would weaken the president and elect.
It would absolutely weaken him. That I agree with completely, completely. The question I guess is how badly beaten down is he by this?
Well,
is he beaten down to the point where he can't get back up? I don't personally think that it's possible these days to be beaten down to the point where you can't get back up, because our media cycle is so rapid fire that you can be on top of the world one day, be down in the dumps the next, and one thing can happen tomorrow that will change everyone's mind.
Yeah. Well, he's not beaten down yet. You know, certainly, and this is...
He got
sort
the
of,
shit kicked out of him by
he
this, got,
he did. Well, he did. He did, but he did it willingly, which is what irritates me about it. But I'll get back to that. I think the biggest indicator is going to be what the ultimate impact of this is. If this happens and I'm horribly wrong and the economy continues to grow and unemployment starts to wind down, then he's going to look okay. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think it's the impact of this deal that's going to hurt him. Now, my bigger philosophy with regards to how I approach the president is this. There's never been a president in history who I have agreed with everything they've done. You know, you read the history books and you can go through and even the most popular presidents. I mean, even Franklin Roosevelt, and as I've been repeating on this show and in the Huffington Post and on the blog, even Franklin Roosevelt was involved. FDR was involved with cutting the budget prematurely. In 1937, he succumbed to conservative advisors and Congress, and they decided to slash the budget. What happened? Backslide in a very deep recession. I mean, unemployment went up another 10 percentage points, for God's sake, because of all of that. I don't agree with everything FDR did. I don't agree with everything Lincoln did, for God. Lincoln was a demon when it came to things like habeas corpus. I mean, so, you know, Lincoln was going to jail a Supreme Court justice. He's just going to throw him in jail. I mean, these are bad, bad things. So I don't think we can judge the president based on a single bad decision. And needless to say, I think going along with the Republicans on this debt deal was a bad decision. I really strongly believe that he should have used the 14th Amendment justification and just raised the debt ceiling himself.
I think that would have been politically a very dangerous thing to do. I think it would have been better for the country, though. I agree with that completely.
Well, and then as far as primarying the president, I think we'd have
I'm one of those people who's been totally against primarying the president. Believe me, when Bernie Sanders mentioned it, I'm like, dude, you know, brilliant guy and a truly upstanding, you know, a truly upstanding member of Congress. But shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's just stupid. And to say, let's get Hillary to primary President Obama.
You know what it is? Here's the thing. This is the analogy that I've always used when it comes to and I didn't want to be one of these people. You know, and I'm hoping I'm not. I'm just maybe, you know, I'm having a brain fart or something. But I figured it was at least worth bringing up and throwing out there. But the analogy I've always used when it comes to Obama and it comes to people who are not the firebaggers. You know, they're going to hate him no matter what. Not the Glenn Greenwalds of the world. They're gonna whine no matter what. Sort of the people who support him one day and then turn around, you know, the independents and Democrats who support him one day and then turn around and find something to bitch about the very next day. I've always compared that to Dathan in the Edward G. Robinson character in Ten Commandments. You know, it's like Moses parts the fucking Red Sea. And like 2 seconds later, when he goes up the mountain, he's been gone for like a day and a half. And Dathan's like, where'd he go? See, he's turned his back on you. Let's build a golden calf. OK, see that? Where did Obama go? You know, I mean, and that really and every the guy built a pillar of fucking fire in the desert from God. And you can't give him a couple of days on the mountain.
That's right. That's right. You know, and I think Bill Maher.
Did you forget? Parting the Red Sea.
That's right. That's right. And I love the Edward G. Robinson reference, too.
Oddly, one of the few Jews in that movie. Strangely enough.
Yeah, Billy Crystal used to do a bit about Edward G. Robinson.
Right, yeah. Where's your Messiah now?
Where's your Messiah now? Where's your Moses now? Yeah.
Right. Shame. But it's true. I told a friend of mine that the other day, and you know, at least he thought it was good for a laugh. Because yeah, it's like I watched it again this past Easter, and I thought that I'm like, all right, these people just watch somebody part the Red Sea. It's like you just watched a guy kill, you know, give the order to kill fucking Osama bin Laden. And a couple of days later, you're bitching because this isn't happening fast enough for you. You know what it is? It's exactly the Louis C.K. bit you played at the beginning.
Yes.
Where, I mean, certainly right. I think things aren't that great right now. But there are things he's done that have been phenomenal. And you'll never fucking, you know, you'll give him credit for it for like 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. There's just no
and
gratitude.
And you find something new to bitch about.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, I just always go back to 1999, 2000, that whole climate where, you know, it was just liberals and Democrats, and we're just like whining, you know, just whining and bitching. Ah, Clinton fatigue. Meh, meh. Al Gore is too stiff. Meh, 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 meh. And then what happens? George W. Bush. You know, we just get bitchy and we get uncomfortable and we just have to bitch and cry and act like a bunch of dicks. And it's just – it's so frustrating because I see it happening again. We can't see the forest for the trees, for God's sake. I mean, we have the most progressive president since FDR, for God's sake. And
but there are people who would argue with you on that. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm saying, and not just, you know, I think that, you know, granted, once again, going back to the thing that I said earlier, there, the people who are in the middle, 99.9% of them, in, as much as this will piss Jane Hampshire off to know, 99% of them don't know or give a fuck who Jane Hampshire, David Serrata, Peter Dow, you know, Glenn Greenwald. They have no idea who the hell they are.
Good.
But I do think that by doing things like what Obama just did, obviously he gives ammo to
that's right
people on the left. And I know that because I'm somebody who's sitting here going, fuck, did he just sell me out?
Yeah.
You know, because I do feel bad about it. I mean, look, you know, I have supported the guy. I've supported the guy, you know, in spite of being angry at him, very angry over certain things, you know, handing the keys, the Frank Rich article, which vented my frustration from New York Magazine a couple weeks ago. You know, the original sin of handing the keys to the crashed economy back to the fucking, you know, psychopathic, sociopathic douchebags who crashed it to begin with. That bothered me,
yeah.
You know, and that started things off on a very bad foot for me.
That's right.
But regardless, I do think he's done a lot of good, and a lot of good that the left doesn't give him credit for.
Right. And this was a great example of the president kind of choking on his own words. And it's so frustrating to watch because I know he's smarter than this. I know. And what he did was he was attempting to strike a deal so that he could appease the centrist independents, the middle independents. And consequently, what you have is a guy who goes to on the stump and goes to campaign rallies and fundraisers and says, these are the guys, these Republicans drove us into the ditch. They drove us into the ditch, and now they want to have control over the economy. Now they want to, you know, they want me to do their bidding and to agree with their policies and their tax cuts and everything like that. And what is he turns around and negotiates with the people who drove us into a ditch. So what? We meet them halfway and only drive halfway into the ditch. It's just it is absolutely mind-boggling, and this was a case where yes, the president does own this one, because it was the Republicans who forced the issue. That is true, but it's the president who could have resorted to another solution. He could have resorted to the 14th Amendment solution and probably come out pretty clean on the other side. He may have been damaged with the middle a little bit, but you know what? It's a hell of a lot less damage than he would receive with this. And the potential for a gigantic second recession.
You know what the other thing is? I know you get off on these references. It goes back to, say it with me, this is more important than re-election. You know? It is. It's, yeah. It's the conversation between Martin Sheen and John Spencer in, I guess it was the Oval Office, you know? You gotta do what's right for the country. And what was right for the country was to not allow us all to be, you know, raped by the sisters in the shower, yeah, which is what happened.
Well, you know what? It's good for the country, and it's also good for the president. I mean, it absolutely is, because if you look at the two outcomes side by side, 14th Amendment, maybe he's exerting a little bit too much executive power over Congress, which has traditionally raised the debt ceiling themselves, versus doing a deal with the people who, quote unquote, drove us into a ditch and is also now risking another recession when things are already bad. That, yeah. I mean, see, to me, there's no choice there. It's easily the 14th Amendment solution. But now it's done. It's over. So what we have to do now is, again, cut our losses and say, well, what's the best approach now? How do we go forward and resolve all of this? It's clearly not by primarying the president, do me a favor. If you're interested in primarying the president and you put any effort towards doing that, shoot yourself in the foot. Just go ahead and do it. Just do it for real. Just shoot yourself in the foot.
I've always thought that. But like I said, I think getting the best of me in the alternate universe, there has always been that part of me that says, how would Hillary handle this? Just, you know, it's just one of those things. It's, yeah. I'm not going to deny my baser instincts.
Well, Bill Clinton did say, I think that the president should resort to the 14th Amendment solution.
He did.
But yeah. I don't think President Bill Clinton would have. President
Probably
Bill Clinton,
not.
President Bill Clinton did a deal with Newt Gingrich. I mean, and I believe that Hillary Clinton would have done the same deal. I mean, Hillary Clinton may have exerted a little more force. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. If I had any clue whatsoever.
It's just frustration. Yeah. It's the frustration talking. It's the frustration and the exhaustion talking.
Yeah. it's like Newt Gingrich trying to hypothesize what would happen and fantasizing about what would happen if the Confederates won Gettysburg. We just don't. Right. We don't know what would really happen. It's a bunch of bullshit. And I think that, the whole – any entertaining of the notion of running Hillary Clinton as a primary candidate against the president is just a phenomenal and stupid waste of time.
And there you go.
I can't even describe how dumb it is. It's dumb on so many levels. We might as well just, hey, why don't we run Mickey Mouse? Hey, let's run SpongeBob.
Oh, SpongeBob.
We'll get to that in a minute, actually. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. They make amazing soap. I mean, it is so invariably sweet smelling, this soap. It smells good, it feels good, it gets you clean, and it comes in a variety. I mean, you wouldn't believe the shapes and sizes the Bubble Genius soap comes in. Plus, they have fun political things, voodoo dolls of Michelle Bachmann that you could have fun with. And they actually have soaps in the shapes of various senators' heads. You can get a Joe Lieberman soap and scrub your taint with it. You so choose. And here is their brand new commercial from Bubble Genius.
It's National Clown Week! Bubble Genius invites you to celebrate your inner goof with one of our silly soaps, like Bathes Like Chicken, Rubber Chicken Soap. Or try our Three Ring Suds Circus Peanut Soap. A bag of delightful soapy peanuts. They look and smell like the real thing, but don't eat them, you wackadoodle. They're soap. So get your clown shoes on and chase away icky dirt. In a funny way. Tickle your funny bone with Bubble Genius. BubbleGenius.com.
We're Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is. Promo code AWESOME. Awesome. Punch that in when you go to buy your stuff from Bubble Genius and get 15% off your entire order. I got to get your mailing address, Chez, because Bubble Genius wants to send you a bunch of soap. You also want
I heard that. Yeah, somebody mentioned, sent me something on Twitter about that, and I said that I buy all my soap from a guy named Tyler. My soap smells like fat women's asses.
Brilliant. I love it. Yeah, I mean, I imagine them in the paper street address, you know, this leaky, filthy building, and, you know, they're reading magazines about, I am Jax Abdullah Ablagnata.
Right.
I am Jack's nipple.
Joe Lieberman-shaped soap.
But, yeah, I mean, you'll get quickly addicted to it. I mean, they send me this hibiscus soap, and they also send their dog soap, which is actually brilliant. I mean, if you order their dog soap, because
it's shaped like a dog?
It's not shaped like a dog. It's actually for your dog. There's like a foot, like a paw print on it, but it smells amazing. I mean, it's actually, we use it on ourselves here. It's great soap.
I've been thinking about getting a dog, so once I get the dog soap, I'll be set.
Yeah, perfect. But remind me, I need to get your address and send. I need Definitely. To get Buzz's address too, our voice guy and our bumpers. Right. And we send him some soap too. But anyway, so we were talking about SpongeBob there.
Speaking of soap.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans, the far right, I should say specifically the far right, because some of them aren't Republicans. They've sort of left the Republican Party and formed their own nonsense. But they like to, they always like to pick on easy targets. Have you noticed this? They like to pick on civilians, like people who are like not in the game. If there's a kid, like, remember there was that
non-combatants.
Non-combatants. There was a kid who... I think Michelle Malkin's like stalked his family or something like that, was hiding in their shrubs and driving by their house. And you know, like Glenn Beck has gone after like elementary schools, and Bill O'Reilly sends his producer out to interview like superintendents from school districts in the middle of nowhere, just nobodies. And they go after these people, I think, because they're just easy targets and they can't fight back. And it's just, it's kind of exemplary of the style of the far right. When you have very little intellectual honesty, when you don't have the facts on your side, all you can really do is to attack the defenseless. And so what they're doing this week,
they don't look at it as defenseless. They, as usual, they look at it as some sort of grand conspiracy indoctrinating children to ways of liberalism or whatever, some such horseshit.
Yeah. And so what they're going after now are they've rekindled their war against cartoons.
Yeah.
They have lots of different wars they're engaged in. War against women. They're against the war against Christmas.
Right.
And now they're going after cartoon characters again. So there was a big deal about the...
Because we need one more made-up controversy.
Yeah, we do. We need to waste time debating whether or not a cartoon character is right or wrong. It's ridiculous. So they're going after Spider-Man. There's a new Spider-Man who is multiracial, who's black and Latino. And this is all kinds of bad. And then Fox and Friends, those hyenas.
A new Spider-Man who's not the actual original Spider-Man.
That's
right. He's in a completely different comic universe. Mm-hmm. And the artist behind it made reference to the fact that at some point later down the road, it won't matter whether the hero is biracial or black or white or gay or whatever. And immediately they jumped on it. So basically he made Spider-Man gay.
That's unbelievable.
Sure. That sticky white stuff he's shooting at you is not a web.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, and this is the reason I bring this stuff up. Well, you know what? I want to play the SpongeBob clip, and then I'll get into why I'm bringing it up. Let's play this clip from Media Matters.
Well, we all know that SpongeBob is popular with the kids, and for the life of me, I still keep trying to figure out
I'm with you. I don't care.
It's a sponge in the ocean.
My kids watch limited TV, but every time they choose that show, I'm like, why? But anyway, it's hard to even follow sometimes.
Are these people high? It's the most popular cartoon show probably in the last 15, 20 years.
That's because a sponge is smarter than Gretchen Carlson.
That's right.
Anyway,
that's
now,
why she doesn't.
Maybe
just think
thing.
About that. Think about that. What she's saying. I have been outsmarted by a cartoon sponge. It's too high up. I just don't understand it. I'm baffled by a cartoon fucking sponge. Me and Deucey the clown here sitting next to me.
That's right.
And Brian Kilmeade, whose fucking eyes are too close together.
Right, that's it.
Because SpongeBob is talking a lot about global warming, and he's only looking at it from one point of view.
Because there's only one point of view, you fuckwit.
That's right. There is only one point of view. God damn it. Is that what? So now, and this is why I'm bringing this up. I don't need to play any more of that. You get it.
There's every scientist in the world, and then there's James Inhofe, who fucking thinks that the world cannot be destroyed because God wouldn't let it happen to his children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So here's exactly why this is a problem. This is why I'm bringing this up. Because I know, yes, it's a big, stupid distraction. But it's worthy of mention, and I'll tell you why. This is how they succeed. This is how they get this stuff going. This is how they've shamed the traditional press into covering both sides of every issue, regardless of whether there is two sides of every issue. Because they jump onto something like this, and people in the media who have one goal, which is ratings, acquiesce to it.
Right.
And say, oh, you know what? We should have presented the other side. Well, you know what? Next time, we'll present the other side. Even though there is no other side, there's one side. When it comes to the climate crisis, when it comes to global warming, one side. One side. We're in it. In fact, we're in it right now. It's happening. It's not something that's going to happen 20 years from now.
There are an overwhelming number of scientists on one side and a handful of people on the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like evolution. You know, I mean, and it's not to say that all science is perfect. It's not. But for God's sakes, don't make it sound like it's 50-50. It's fucking not. Yeah. In your mind, it's 50-50. And that's, you hit it on the head. That's the problem. The problem is that when the news department from not Fox News gets a hold of the controversy and decides that they're going to report on it, the only thing they can do is have on two people. So they're going to bring on one person who says it's for real, one person who says it's not. And at no point are they going to say, this is, it's not really 50-50.
Mm-hmm. If we, what, you know what? If it was 50-50, then talk about it. But you know what? It's not. It's not. Not even in the slightest.
Yeah. But they stop trying to report on objective reality because they feel that objective reality somehow has a bias, which it often does.
Yeah.
But if it's reality, it doesn't freaking matter.
Right. And then it goes back to the Stephen Colbert quote, which is reality has a well-known liberal bias.
Right.
I mean, it just so happens that the liberal position when it comes to global warming is real. I mean, just stick your arm out of the window of your car. And there it is. There it is. You can't avoid it.
But you know, you never know because, you know, Steve Doocy, he's a guy I trust. Doocy the fucking clown.
Steve Doocy, who was doing the, you know, woman who has a potato chip in the shape of Lincoln's head stories at the end of Channel 4 News in Washington, D.C. for many years. And right. now he's the expert on cartoons and their point of view of global warming.
Unbelievable.
It's so aggravating. But again, this is how they achieve that sort of bullshit both sides thing. They just shame people over and over again, and they don't stop. They don't ever stop. And I don't anticipate that Nickelodeon and the creators of SpongeBob are going to, you know, suddenly have a a climate gate episode of SpongeBob. I don't think it's going to happen. But regardless, this is how they get it to happen. This is weaker people succumb to this kind of horseshit, and you know, I think on the other hand, what we have to do, and this is going back to something we were saying earlier, is we have to adopt some of that, and with the facts on our side, with reality on our side, I don't see how it could lose. I don't see how that's a losing argument. I think we can actually start to swing the pendulum back. So. There we go. You know what? I think we needed to end on something positive.
Is that positive? Jesus.
Swinging the pendulum.
I'm going to take my, I promise I'll take my Prozac this week, so I'll be better next week.
Well, you know, I mean, again, this is something that affects us all. It's not like, I hate to say it, but it's not like rendition or even torture, which is all bad. I mean, that's bad.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily take money out of my wallet. It doesn't actually make me poor. This does. That's why I guess
I'm going to make myself feel better by watching the season premiere of Jersey Shore in a few minutes. That'll work. That won't depress me more.
That's right. It's at times like this when you got to turn on HGTV and watch a marathon of House Hunters and turn your brain to mush for a little while. Get concerned about granite countertops and
yep.
being close enough to the Miracle Mile. You know, that's it. These are the important priorities. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, we'll
very much.
We'll not be wearing suits made of barrels next week. I'll see you next week, Chez. Take care.
Yep, you too, man. Bye, everybody.
Normally, I wear protection. But then I thought, when am I going to make it back to Haiti?
Bad idea, Jim.